Hello there. You are tuning in to the 61st episode of Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina welcoming you. In my work with edible weeds, a few learning that I have learned over the years, they are, wild greens are awesome in terms of nutrition, but especially macronutrients. Did you know one third of the world is deficient in micronutrients, which means doesn't matter rich or poor, the third person is really, one third of the population of the world needs the micronutrients, and one of the best sources of micronutrients are these wild edible greens. If tended, most of the wild greens flourish. That is, if they are growing in an area, for example, and allowed to grow, that is, you don't have an efficient gardener and you don't mind having a little unplanned plants growing in your yard or pot, they actually flourish quite well if you provide them a little care. They are very cheap to grow, tend, and take care. They can use bad soil, can do with whatever water is available. And of course, if there is more water, depending on the type of the plant, they may flourish better. But that doesn't mean they will not grow in, less water condition. They are excellent indicators of soil conditions, which is, soil is the living soil is kind of the most resilient, resources we have for the well-being of the earth and therefore our health. They are also known in science as the best indicator at hand for climate change. So if we know about the weeds and can keep up with the changing succession, they may go through to adapt with the climate. And along with that, we can remain in tune and remain adapted to the change. In this changing time, they can provide an excellent and reliable food source that is easy to access irrespective of whether one is in the rural or urban areas or semi-urban areas, or rich or poor. They are wonderfully nutritious as well. I'm not even touching upon the medicinal values. Food is the best medicine, according to Ayurveda also. There has to be the right kind and enough. Seems like we as Indians are not doing very well in providing our own people with enough nutritious food. In that context, while designing the Edible Weed Initiative, I have found that social stigma associated with eating weeds or wild greens are ingrained not just amongst the urbanites, but in the rural areas as well. As part of the economic mobility, vertical mobility, people do not feel the need to collect the wild food and often deliberately stop that activity as undesirable. And over time, they lose the ethnobiological knowledge associated with that also. This is not just in India. I found a paper based in British Columbia, that's in Canada, which is a totally different climate, totally different set of people, and there are indigenous people in that area. Still, they found that they have a significant loss in the biodiversity knowledge there. Reasons are various. Some are similar to ours and some are not. For example, changing a knowledge system, more westernization. In case of British Columbia, many indigenous people coming to the mainstream, both in terms of religion and practice. Then getting trained in residential schools that cause a loss of indigenous knowledge and loss of indigenous language. It also means loss of time and opportunity for the traditional practices because one is not involved in homely chores. This I have seen in many parts of India as well, as students from the rural and indigenous community are sent to the residential schools elsewhere. Later in their lives, the students, when they grow adult, find it difficult to revive their traditional knowledge and lifestyles since they become part of the wage economy. And they have no time for this kind of lifestyle. Our food and nutrition and well-being are very much linked to our lifestyle. A village woman who needs to report to work at 8:30 a.m. in the morning and gets out from home at 8 a.m. and return home after 4:30, which is exactly the schedule most women in the bioregion, which is a mix of urban, semi-urban and rural areas, cannot be really expected to go collecting wild greens for themselves and their families before or after work, right? So over time, this knowledge becomes rusty and lost. Like us in Canada too, they have also found increasing urbanization, loss of access to traditional resources, and more recently, forced globalization and industrialization as some of the causes of such loss. Efforts to renew and restore relationship with plants and environment is a must. It must recognize the cumulative effect of the factors that led to the loss of knowledge and find ways to retain and reinforce the knowledge and develop new relevant and effective ways to set our control to the nature. In that effort, I had written a proposal. Recently, I heard that some of the members of the review team, who are hopefully also from this bioregion, did not believe that there is a stigma in using greens among the Indian population, especially among the rural population. They wrote that a variety of greens, including moringa, are used regularly by rural women and their families as an example of their point. Really? Seriously, people? Here the assumption is that there is no stigma. Moringa leaves, which is, by the way, not a wild green at all, and others are enough for the rural women at least to lead a happy, healthy life. What an idyllic portrayal of especially actualities of the rural life. Just to keep ourselves informed, please check the latest 2021 Global Hunger Index. Here, India, where still majority of the population lives in the villages, ranks pitifully low. Its rank is 101 among 116 countries that are rated. So this ranking is much lower than all its neighbors. For example, Nepal, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and also Pakistan. Especially, except for Bhutan. Bhutan's score was not available. But for all others whose score is available, India is much lower than all of them. India has scored 27.5, which is categorized as serious hunger problem throughout the country. Then, if you don't believe in that index, I do not know who brings out that Global Hunger Index. I found a study done by our own National Institute of Nutrition on diet and nutritional status of rural adolescent in India. Information on the socioeconomic status, this study was really, really thorough. Information on the socioeconomic status were collected across 9 states for more than 12,000 adolescent boys and girls. Dietary information were collected from a subset of more than 2,500 individuals. This study found across the board, 39% of the adolescent girls and boys both were stunted, and this is because of the malnutrition. About 40 to 53% of the girls and boys were undernourished. And the problem was much more pronounced amongst the Dalit communities. About 70% of the adolescent consumed more than 70% of the RDA, which is recommended dietary allowance for energy. So you would think, you know, that's pretty good, no? 70% at least. Actually, it's not very good. It shouldn't be 70%. It should be 100%. And most of the countries who ranks much higher than us, they have much more than, you know, it's 100% and some. The intake of micronutrients such as vitamin A and riboflavin were woefully low, inadequate, that this study has found. Imagine vitamin A and riboflavin. So do you know how much riboflavin are Ponnangani and the entire Joywood family depicted in my book? There are three, four, right? Alternanthera sessilis, Alternanthera ficoidea, Alternanthera brasiliana. About 12 mg per 100 grams. And you think, oh my God, who is going to collect 100 grams of ponnangani in it? Do you know how much recommended daily dose for people above 19 years old for riboflavin? Anything between 0.6 to 1 milligram. How much green is needed for that? 4 to 5 grams. It's like a little bit, a handful. A handful of Alternanthera or Ponnangani growing wild would be enough. Do you think the rural India will not gather and eat if this knowledge was not lost and was widely known and if there were no stigma at all? So the other nutrient mentioned in this report is vitamin A. Another very key nutrient. Why? Vitamin A, as you know, is the key ingredient for stopping night blindness and many other ailments. Taro, you know, which is colocasia, which is sepinkaranga, our Dioscorea bulbifera. The root is called, I think, vatalavalli karanga, and the air potato. It also grows air potato. Both can be eaten. That, and then there is a local tuber called kurkan. It comes from the mint family. All these they are very rich in vitamin A. Dioscorea bulbifera, air potato, for example, actually even the roots, they contain 3.8 mg per 100 milligram of weight. So about taro, I actually had a whole podcast on that. So if you are really interested in this topic, please listen up to my podcast number 47, where I speak in details about how a taro can address the lack of vitamin A in diet much more than fortified food. Now about fortified food also, I had a whole podcast on that. That is not my opinion per se. It is the experts talking about how fortification is not necessarily the answer. The answer, as we all know intuitively, is the answer is the diversity. The diversity in our food will make us, keep us resilient, as the diversity in nature gives the earth resilience. So for the podcast on the fortified food, you check on the podcast number 57. For development and progress, we need healthy population. You cannot have a healthy nation with most of the people not eating enough and falling sick. Healthy population is impossible without healthy nature. Our food choices can go a long way in making us the right choice. Along with the choosing for ourselves, we need to support and enable others to do the same. With that thought, I'll end today, and stay well and stay safe. I'll see you next time.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.